Welcome to the Health Science Coach Podcast. My name is Drew Garner, and I'm a health science and physical education teacher. This is a podcast to help students, parents, and recent graduates learn about pathways into healthcare and sports medicine careers. These industry professionals lay out how their experiences have helped them get to where they are now. If you enjoy this content, please subscribe to the channel or download through your podcast player. Thanks again for spending some time with us today. Now let's dig in. Today, we get the pleasure of meeting Dr. Dawn Emerson. She is an assistant professor at the University of Kansas Medical Center here in Kansas City and teaches courses in the athletic training master's degree program. Welcome, Dawn. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for coming on and spending some time with us talking about the University of Kansas and what you guys have to offer down there as a part of the master's program. Can you talk to us a little bit about what it means to be an assistant professor in a program like that of athletic training?
Absolutely. So my position, I'm considered like third faculty, so I get a little bit of leeway in what I can do versus someone who's like the program director or clinical coordinator. So I primarily teach in our athletic training program, and the courses that I teach are pharmacology and general medical conditions. I also teach the emergent and acute care, which is sort of like the emergency response and critical care type stuff. And then I also do orthopedic eval and interventions. And so our program is really unique because we're housed with physical therapy, and our athletic training students take a lot of courses with the physical therapy students. So I've actually been able to teach with a physical therapist, which has been really fun to learn about that and just learn from each other. And so I do that. And then I do a lot of research. My position is pretty heavy in research as well. And so for me, I do a lot of research with exertional heat illness. So I look at risk factors for heat stroke and like why people get heat stroke and just try to understand that a little bit more. And we've been doing a lot of stuff with marching band recently where we've been trying to show that marching band members get heat illness. And they have a lot of the same risk as athletics and like the typical athletes that we think of. And so we've been doing quite a few studies right now with looking at that and trying to advocate for them to have athletic trainers. So that pretty much sums up my my role.
Well, that's pretty cool. So as a professor, a typical day or week, how many hours are you spending in the labs teaching versus doing research and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I typically teach 2 to 3 days a week. And right now I teach 2 days a week and it's 5 hours each day, which is sort of a lot. It's like a lot in a day for that, really. And then in between that, I'm, you know, checking emails or grading or prepping and stuff like that. The other days, I typically spend quite a bit of time doing the research aspect. So, and that entails like finding funding opportunities, publishing our papers, getting the studies going. And so, and then, of course, you know, prepping class always takes several hours and getting ready. So, and the thing about we're such a new program and our classes are so new that there's a lot of prep right now and just trying to figure out the program still. And so I put a lot of effort into prepping for class.
Yeah, absolutely. So when a student is looking into KU as a master's program for their athletic training, what typical types of students are coming in? Do they have undergraduates in athletic training, and how does that whole process kind of take place?
Yeah, for the most part, most of our students come from exercise science programs. So they get their undergraduate degree in exercise science, and that really, for the most part, that degree meets all the prerequisites to be able to get into an athletic training program. So that's sort of the easiest, but we have a lot of individuals who maybe come like a pre-med route and they decide that they didn't necessarily want to go to med school or like biology or anything else like that. Sometimes you get a non-traditional student who they worked for a little while in another career and then they decided they wanted to come into athletic training. So as long as you have the prereqs to get into the program, it doesn't really matter which route you take to get here. But exercise science is probably the most common. Sometimes we get psychology. That's usually the most common ones.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty cool then. So they're able to, you know, start the program. And how many years is the master's program there?
Our program is a two years. They start in June, typically right after that holiday, Memorial Day, and then it's a full 2 years. So they start in the summer and then they will end 2 years later in May.
Okay. And how many hours and what kind of the class breakdown going through progression of them starting to graduation? What does that kind of look like?
Yeah, it really kind of, it's very heavy in the first year, and we sort of did that because we sort of backload that second year with a lot of clinical experience. And so the first year in the program is pretty heavy in academics. They're taking anywhere from 3 to 6 classes a semester, just sort of depends. The first year they have anatomy and sort of foundational concepts of athletic training and some biomechanics and some other stuff. And then they progress through into the fall, which we just had, and that's where we do a lot of the emergency acute care. So our students just did, and I teach that course, so we just did like spine boarding and like traumatic bleeding and like critical incident type stuff, and just dealing with some more of that emergency aspect. And then they do like pathophys and pharmacology and whatnot. And then they progress through and they start the clinicals in the fall. And so they're able to start getting some experience with the athletic trainers and start working that in. They typically have like 10 to 15, 20 hours a week, just sort of depends on what's going on with clinicals once they start that on top of classes as well. And then once they get into their second year, it starts slowing down a tad with the like classwork and really start focusing more on getting that clinical experience with the athletic trainers, seeing patients, trying to apply all this information that they just got.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to be able to see that move through and go as a, you know, the 2-year program and pathway. So a little bit about your educational background, and we'll kind of move through and talk about your education and your job experience because they kind of go hand in hand. So you started at Florida International University studying athletic training for your undergraduate degree. How did you choose that school in particular?
Yeah, I actually started at Alabama for my undergrad. So I got my undergrad at Alabama, but I did a year at Florida International University for my master's degree. So for my undergrad at Alabama, I grew up as an Auburn fan because I was in Alabama. And I was like, I'm never going to Alabama. I actually told my dad, like, I just won't go to school. And he's like, you're crazy. Because I was like such a hardcore Auburn fan.
Right.
But there were only so many schools that had athletic training at in the state. And I needed to go in state. And so I went to West Alabama for a semester and it just wasn't for me. So I transferred to Alabama and I loved it. And so now I'm an Alabama fan. So that's sort of how I chose it. They were just sort of limited on what my options were for athletic training programs. And Alabama had a really great program at the time and just fit my learning style more. And so that's why I ended up going there. And then I went to Florida International University for my master's. I chose that school on a very impulsive, personal reason that I do not suggest people choose schools that way. You shouldn't be impulsive and do it for like personal things like that. But I only stayed there a year. And even though it was a really difficult time there, I got a lot out of being there. So even though I stayed there a year and I transferred to South Carolina to finish my master's degree, I know that as difficult as that experience was at FIU, it absolutely set me up to where I am now. And I'm so grateful that I went there, even though maybe the reason to go there was not necessarily the best reason.
And being a person of transferring schools, I've been to 3 to get my undergraduate and then 2 more master's schools. So, you know, transferring, especially with knowing what credits you need and a master's program, especially, it's pretty, you know, important to make sure that you're able to keep those classes and those transfer over. And I'm sure with athletic training, most of those kind of go hand in hand and be able to transfer as well. So you studied and finished your master's there at South Carolina. Mm-hmm. What made you want to go from getting your master's straight into getting your doctorate of exercise science?
That's a great question. I always knew that I eventually wanted to get my PhD and get my doctorate. And I knew that I wanted to go into teaching and I wanted to do research. I did not plan to go straight through. So that's kind of a common thing that people don't really know. Should I just go straight through or should I go work clinically for a little while? And that was a really hard decision because there's so much value in just going into clinical practice and getting that experience with patient care. I really wanted to work ice hockey. Like, that was my dream situation. Like, I wanted to be an athletic trainer, and it just wasn't working out when I was looking for jobs. It just wasn't panning out. And South Carolina gave me the opportunity to stay and teach for them and to do research and to get my doctorate there. And so it was a difficult decision, but I eventually just decided to stay, and I couldn't really pass up an opportunity to be in a place that was really going to allow me to do what I wanted to do in terms of my doctorate and get that experience. And I don't know French, so it was really hard for me to like get a job with hockey, because that was kind of an important thing and the right positions that were open. So it was just the best choice for me at the time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What made you want to be a teacher? Is that something that you grew up like kind of thinking about, being an athletic trainer and being a researcher and trainer? Or how did that kind of play out to go into athletic training initially?
Yeah, I never really thought that I was going to go into teaching. I guess in high school, I originally wanted to be a band director. And like, that was my original plan. And then I got introduced to athletic training and decided that was my pathway instead. And I did not have any intentions of being a teacher or anything like that. So it wasn't really until I got to grad school and they sort of just gave us an option of like, I could earn extra money if I wanted to help teach classes. Right. And I'm like, oh, I could do that. And so I really liked helping the students, the younger students. I liked being, you learn a lot more when you have to teach it, right? And so
yep.
I was finding that I was learning a lot more, and I really liked helping them, and I liked seeing the light bulbs go off when stuff made sense to them. And then I was really scared of research at first. I think people are really intimidated by having to do research, and they think it's just a lot of work. And I was even very scared of doing it. But then once I started doing it, I found that I really liked it. I really loved science, and I really wanted to know more about why things were happening the way that they were and trying to understand it. And so it just sort of evolved over time and wasn't something that I came in knowing that I really wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, like you said, having to know French to be able to kind of work that hockey arena and area, you know, being a graduate teaching assistant is something that a lot of people really should take advantage of. I feel like you said, helping to pay for the school with those types of positions, teaching and undergraduate students. While you were there, after you finished, you were a clinical instructor at South Carolina. We talked with your coworker, Brian, in one of our other episodes. So we have a general idea of, you know, what that kind of looks like. So you stayed in that position for about 2 years, and then you got a opportunity to come to Kansas. How did that kind of play out from being from the South and the general area down there for, you know, most of your life and career?
Yeah, it was sort of a situation where, well, I needed a job because I was graduating and I was looking for a permanent job. And then also, once you get your doctorate, especially when you're research focused, you get very narrowed down into what your expertise is. And so I was very narrowed down into, I do heat illness research, and there are only so many places that will support a researcher doing heat illness research. Yeah. And especially for athletic training, it was, especially at the time, difficult to find an institution that would support what I was trying to do. And so Kansas happened to have a job open, and they had the research facilities. They were housed with exercise science, which is where my degree was. And so I definitely had no thoughts that I would move to the Midwest. but I also just didn't hold myself geographically bound. And I think that sometimes when you're looking for jobs, people can get really pigeonholed into like, I have to be in this area. And that's great. And I think that there's lots of reasons for that, but I was in a position where I didn't have to do that. And so I was able to be more flexible about where I was looking for jobs. Right. And so Kansas had a position. They offered me a position to come and be able to do research here and to be able to teach in the athletic training program, which I really wanted to do, and to be with exercise science and to be able to collaborate. So that's how I ended up in Kansas. They gave me a job.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Though, I mean, by you know, like you said, being a researcher and being kind of going down that narrow path of, you know, heat illness, you have to be open to other areas based upon geographic location. So that was in Lawrence then, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you worked there in Lawrence for 6 years. Had a couple different positions, coordinator of clinical education, the program director, also an assistant professor teaching undergraduate students. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then worked in the training program at there at KU. During those 5 years, what kind of helped you lead up to the position you are at now?
Yeah, I sort of fell into being program director just given other faculty leaving, and it's definitely not something that I had aspired to be, but it put me in a position to be able to, as the profession has mandated that athletic training programs now be offered at the master's degree level, we knew that we had to phase out the undergrad program that was being offered at the bachelor's. And so being in the program director position allowed me to start having those conversations with administrators and just individuals in the community that were like, how are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to still have athletic training at Kansas? And that was something that people were really passionate about we don't want this program to just go away. We want to see athletic training offered at the University of Kansas in some capacity. And so being able to just have the leadership position that I had on the Lawrence campus, I was able to be involved in the conversations about the new degree program, about moving from Lawrence to the medical center and what that meant. And a lot of that was recommendations from our accrediting body saying, we really should be housed with similar professions. We need to be housed with health sciences and other like programs. And so we started those conversations with the School of Health Professions, and I was able to be involved with those, which was great. And physical therapy, the department has been very welcoming to us. And so I really think that as I sort of went up into the program ranks, if you will, that I was able to be a part of these conversations and help facilitate the move of this program over.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So is there a way for students, I know that physical therapy at KU used to have this, but the accelerated program where they are an undergraduate student and then maybe work quicker through the program?
Our current program is not set up that way. I know that there are programs that are, and those have been conversations, absolutely. There's lots of benefits to it. But as of right now, our program is an independent two-year program. So we recommend students get their undergraduate degree and whatever they want, exercise science is easiest, right, and then apply for our program.
Yeah, that's pretty good then. A lot of these different types of careers that I'm learning about while we're doing this are things that I wish I would have known when I was in college or in high school. So it's kind of fun to think about, you know, what it could have been. So now you're at KU at the medical center. You're teaching the master's classes and doing your heat related research. Let's talk a little bit about the type of research you do and what you kind of found. You know, as you were describing it earlier, thinking about band members out on the field, it's just, I mean, a lot of these turf fields now that high schools and colleges have are really, really hot, and they absorb the heat because of the little black pebbles. Now, band members are, you know, fully long pants, buttoned up, hats, everything. Marching, so they're wearing more clothes most of the time than the athletes are. You want to talk a little bit about your research and kind of, you know, different things that people should look for in heat related illnesses?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. I was in marching band in high school, so I saw people passing out all the time from heat illness, and I sort of had always wanted to research them. And I approached some colleagues of mine who are at the University of South Carolina, and they had been working with a marching band in the past and were familiar with some of the medical issues in there. And I was like, I really think heat illness is a problem in this particular population for all the reasons you just described, the turf, the uniforms, everything. And so we decided to sort of explore a little bit about what that looks like. And so we did a study with KU's marching band and South Carolina's marching band, and we took core temperature, which we use core temperature pills. So the person swallows a pill and then we can walk up to them with a little receiver and see how hot they are, which is pretty cool. And so we were able to track them during the rehearsals, but we were also able to track them during football games. And so we wanted to see how hot are they really getting. And they got hot. They were just as hot as what we see with football and soccer and runners and things like that. And and then we were looking at risk factors. Like, what is it about being in marching band that's a risk factor? And then the environment, of course, it's hot. We took environmental measures, and the football field at the Kansas Stadium is turf. And it was unbelievably hot on one of the days that they were in full uniform. It was like 120 degrees on the field. Like, it's just amazingly hot. And, you know, half the band is underneath the stands because they're all having heat loss. Wow. it was just so incredible to see just how everything sort of fits together. Heat illness is very individualized. Like, not everyone obviously experiences it. And even on a football team, you'll get a couple people who all of a sudden have a heat illness. And it's really about individual risk factors. And that's what we're really trying to push with some of our research right now, is it's so individualized. It's about hydration, but it's also about medical conditions. So what type of medical conditions do these individuals have? And what's unique about marching band is that they're generally a general student population, right? They're not athletes who have been screened and have all of this access to medical care before they participate in a sport. And so you're getting general students who have cardiovascular issues and respiratory issues and all these potentially other conditions that are going to predispose them. And we see that also taking certain medications predisposes individuals. So particularly mental health drugs. So mental health drugs increase the risk for heat illness. And a lot of marching band directors, they have no information about what type of medical conditions their members have. They're just there, right? And they're like doing music and this is what it is, but there's nobody to screen them. There's nobody to know this person is taking mental health drugs. And so if somebody does have a heat illness, you also sometimes have no medical personnel there to know what to do either. And so one of the things that we've been really just trying to do is just raise awareness of the types of medical conditions that they have, that heat illness is a risk. If they're using mental health drugs or taking like cardiovascular drugs, they're at a greater risk. And I think it's really opened up the eyes of band directors to know that these things are happening within their members and that they need to be prepared. We've been trying to advocate for marching bands to work with athletic trainers at their schools to try to implement some policies. Ideally, it would be wonderful if an athletic trainer was working with a marching band full time and like on site and taking care of them. But we've just really been trying to raise awareness over the past several years about that. I would love to, my next step is I really love to look at uniforms and like how hot are they really getting underneath the uniforms, and doing some skin temperature measures and core temperature and really figuring out like what's the impact there. So I could talk about marching band a lot and research, but
well, that's totally cool, because I like when you were talking, a couple things came into my mind. So I coached baseball prior. And we would coach tournaments at University of Kansas on their field, and the baseball field is turfed as well. Like you said, it gets really hot. One day, one of my shoes, the glue on the shoe melted off, and so my shoe basically disintegrated, and I didn't have a shoe. But what our catcher got heat stroke, and so he was in the catching stance, vomiting during the game. And so he couldn't move, his muscles all cramped up. Big guy, 6'3", 220. And so me and one of our other coaches had to physically pick him up and carry him into the locker room dugout area. What are some things that warning signs or look fors or tells that people should be aware of as an athletic trainer looking at athletes or anybody with heat related illnesses?
Yeah, in general, when we see like heat exhaustion, for instance, some of those warning signs are dizziness and fatigue, and they like feel hot or they start to get irritable a little bit. For heat stroke, we say that our key signs and symptoms are central nervous system dysfunction, which really gets to that like irrational behavior, or if they pass out. Sometimes people with heat stroke get really combative, and so they're like screaming and yelling, and they have no idea what's happening because the brain is just so hot. And so anytime someone is just acting out of normal for their behavior, we start to think that they might have heat stroke. and vomiting, of course, like anything like those signs and symptoms. I will say that, like, there's this misconception that when people stop sweating, that's a sign of heat stroke, and that's not true for exertional heat stroke. And that's a huge misconception, because they'll be like, oh, they're still sweating, so they don't have a heat stroke. And that's just not true, because they're exercising, right? Like, they're sweating. And so you see that in passive, but not necessarily exertional heat stroke, but lots of signs and symptoms. We generally take core temperature to figure out like whether it's actually a heat stroke or not. But for like a coach or anyone who just doesn't have a way to take core temperature, like, that's just not a possibility. Right. So you can only rely on how is that person behaving and what are they exhibiting.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And with the research, you're able to devise, I guess, plans, like you talked about athletic trainers and being able to be with them, specifically with the bands. High school versus college, I know college bands typically have, I don't know, 100 to 200 members maybe, in the bigger ones.
Or more.
Yeah. And so with high schools, we maybe have, I don't know, 50, let's say 50 kids that are participants in the marching band. And the athletic director is in charge, or not the athletic, the athletic trainer is in charge of all the athletes in the fall. So she's working with three or four different sports teams at the time. What should they be like looking at, or, you know, maybe talking with the band director about prior to the season starting?
Yeah, at the high school, it's really difficult because the athletic trainer has so many people that they're responsible for. So I think that for the marching bands, I think it's best, like, preseason band camp time to really talk about prevention. So education about what are risk factors, and to some degree, people have to take responsibility for themselves, right? Like, I can educate you on all these things that you need to do. You need to sleep well and eat well and be aware of your hydration status and things like that. Those are things that people have to be aware of themselves, and taking the time to just educate them and say, hey, I just want 20 minutes with the band to talk about heat illness, or with the band directors, and talk about prevention. Having water available to them, making sure, one of the big key things is making sure that they have rest breaks, and they have rest breaks in the shade. So a lot of times when we think about water breaks, it's like a quick drink and then they keep going. But the idea is that you rest in the shade to allow the core temperature to come down. And that person really needs time to rest and recover before they go back to activity. So making sure that those things match up. So it's a lot of prevention and education. I think one of the other really huge things that athletic trainers can talk to the band directors about, or anyone at preseason, is recognition of a heat illness, specifically a heat stroke, because heat stroke is life-threatening. And you basically have 30 minutes from the time the person reaches a critical temperature to get them cooled down below 102.5, or they start to get long-term organ damage and things like that. And so proper cooling down is also important. Ice water immersion is the best way. And so if you think about, like, the band field, if somebody was actually having a heat stroke, do they have any way to treat them? And, like, what are the resources they have available to them? If they can't do ice water immersion, there's some other methods that are, you know, okay and acceptable, but, like, working on those things beforehand so that if something does happen, it's not such a critical incident, and that they have a plan in place, you know, and they can call or do whatever they need to do to take care of that person.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just getting that, like you said, educating the members of the band as well as the band directors, I think is going to be a key step coming forward throughout all levels. What is it about your job that you just absolutely love waking up and going to work every day for?
I really love research. As you can tell, I could talk a lot about research. So I really like that, and just exploring more. But I love teaching too. And one of the things that I really love about teaching the students is sort of what I mentioned earlier, just seeing those light bulbs go off and seeing them understand things. Being able to help them get to their career goals. Like, one of the things I always like to do at the beginning of, we have cohorts, so obviously they start, right, and we're going to see them go throughout, is asking them what they want to do and where they see themselves after graduation, and then I want to help them get to that point. And to be able to see them at the end and graduation and being able to move forward and getting those jobs and seeing them even years later, I think like that's what's really rewarding, is to see their successes and them moving forward.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I do like that as well. You know, I'll see a kid their freshman year teaching them in health or PE or swim class, and then senior year team again, say, all right, where are we going? What's going on? New team plan. What are some misconceptions you think there might be out there about it could be athletic training, or like you said, your research with heat illness, or maybe more specific heat illness with the band?
Oh, that's a good, there's so many. I think that, well, especially for like band, they just, I don't know, some people are just like, oh, they're just the band. And I don't know why that's like the assumption, but it's like, oh, let's just not worry about them or something. And I think that we need to change that mindset. Right. I guess sort of back to ice hockey, one of the things that I did when I was a master's student and that I'm still pretty interested in doing is that there's this misconception that they don't have problems with heat illness and that they don't have problems with hydration because they're in a cold environment. Right. So being, you know, it's ice hockey, right? And so like, what's really like, how much risk could they be? But they're also covered head to toe in equipment and they're working really hard. And so there's not a lot of research out there on that, but they definitely get warm too. And we did some stuff when I was a master's student and just talking to athletic trainers working in that setting. I've heard cases of hockey players having heat illnesses on the bench. And they have lots of hydration issues and things like that. So I think that misconception that just because they're in a cold environment, they don't suffer from heat illness.
Yeah.
Is a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thinking about it, skating is basically running, if not even more, but using your legs really hard and aggressively. But yeah, I think that, you know, being covered with the equipment and basically football equipment, shoulder pads, right, all that stuff as well. That's pretty interesting to think that, you know, that there is that out there as well. So you've been in the industry as a professional professor teaching, you know, 10 or so years now while you were getting your doctorate. What is something that you're most proud of accomplishing?
I think the proudest things that I'm just really grateful to be a part of is that I've been a medical volunteer with the Boston Marathon for 11 years. And it's been an incredible opportunity. And over the last several years, I've been able to work with another athletic trainer and a physician in leading the heat deck. And the heat deck is basically where we treat the exertional heat stroke runners. So when they either picked up off the course or at the finish line, if they're having a heat stroke, they get brought to us. And I mean, being a life-threatening situation, we have to work fast. You have to assess and you have to manage that. And some people, like, it can be like any emergency situation, like a little bit scary, right? Like this person is in a really serious situation and our entire job is to basically save them at that time. And so seeing them come in and then us caring for them and then being able to see them walk out and go home and be with their families and loved ones, that's probably the most rewarding experience as an athletic trainer that I've had, is just seeing that come together and like working with that team to be able to help that person and seeing them go home.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm a former runner, I guess I would call myself, or a triathlete. I've done 2 marathons. I'm nowhere near fast enough to run Boston. So that's really cool to be able to. I've had some friends finish up there. So seeing them be able to accomplish that, but then, you know, seeing people in the medical tents in triathlons, that's a really serious type thing, because a lot of those events, you know, those people are pushing themselves to a very extreme limit during adverse weather and sometimes, and it gets hot quick out there. So being able to volunteer with something like that, I think it's really cool to help those people, you know, be able to get out and recover from that severe of an issue going on with them. So like we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, you talked about moving from the South up to Kansas. For your job specifically, you know, you've bounced a couple different schools. Is there anything you regret not doing during your educational background or maybe your professional area?
I don't like to say that I regret things because I feel like the choices that I made have put me on this path now, and I'm really happy with where I am. No, it's okay.
Differently.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily regret it, but I definitely, just having known how much I really wanted to like work with ice hockey clinically, I think I've always, like I went back, right, as I explained earlier, like what's that pathway? Did I want to work more clinically or did I want to take my PhD? And when you start your PhD and you go down that path, that's pretty much that's the path you're on. So of course, yeah, I look back and say like, what if I had worked a little bit more or had done that? It would have been a lot of fun. And the sport is fun. As an athletic trainer, I find the sport is fun because there's always something to do. Very rarely are you ever just waiting for things to happen. And just the sport itself is great. So I don't regret it, but definitely looking back, like wish I had more time. I did get to work clinically for a little while with a team, and that was a lot of fun. I loved it. And so I'm glad that I at least got that experience.
Yeah, I think that's a much better way of wording that question now. I've taken notes from different conversations. So yeah. Being able to work in different fields, like you said, and going your doctorate is your doctorate for a long time, and you're working on that thing for a while. That's interesting to think, you know, what if you had done this before that, or how it would have worked out now. So then taking that question and turning it into future goals for yourself professionally, think 5-10 years down the road, what are some goals that you would like to achieve for yourself?
I'm excited to see where our program is going to be. We're so young. And so I think being able to shape that program now and in like 5-10 years, being able to look back and see how far we came and what we've created it to be. So getting this program really well established and, you know, seeing the students go through and move on, just because it's such a different big change being at the master's degree level and now being with the health professions. There's so much potential here, and I'm excited for us to capitalize on that and to really get such a high quality experience and education for our students here. So I guess one of my goals is to just continue to see this through as we're developing this program and really growing it at the Med Center. And then in terms of like research wise, I just really want to keep pushing forward with the marching band stuff and being able to work with my colleagues. We're all very passionate about that particular topic and just trying to raise awareness there. So I'd really love to see more athletic trainers being able to work with marching arts and for that to just to be that awareness among that population of that we need to pay attention to them more.
Yeah, I like that. That's, you know, being able to spread your knowledge of that to, like you said, your students and on your research as well. So as a professor and a researcher, what are some of the professional development things you have to do to stay current with your certifications?
We're required to get continuing education every year, and it's 50 continuing education hours every 2 years. So we just all crammed in a bunch of professional development because it was due in December. but I attend conferences, local conferences, our national conference, because I really like exercise science. I also go to like the American College of Sports Medicine conferences and things like that. So we try to work on professional development. Just attending those allows us to see current research, and it allows us to see the current topics and like what's the best evidence right now on a particular topic of interest. And then also my supervisor has been really great this past year with me trying to understand that I really love reading. And so she's like, why don't you consider like the reading that you're doing professional development? And I was like, oh yeah. So like she's given some suggestions, and I'd be like, oh, I'm reading this book. And she's like, oh, that's great professional development. And I just never framed it in that way, cause it was just, right. I like reading, so I'm going to read this. So, I get to read, and then I also get to learn a little bit about myself and how to apply it and grow. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Being able to, you know, have somebody that takes as your supervisor, being able to take that knowledge of you being liking reading and applying it to your profession is really important. So kind of like you said, at some of those conferences, being able to catch up with some of the industry trends, what are some of the things that athletic trainers are seeing currently as some trends
There's so many. I think as like an industry, I just think that we're branching out a lot into different areas and that we're starting to get, there's just so many settings that athletic trainers can work in, and it can seem a little bit overwhelming at times, but we're growing a lot in those areas. So we're getting even more research. We're getting more information about what it means to be an athletic trainer in those settings. So if it's military, a law enforcement or fire or anything else that's sort of emerging, performing arts, all of those are very early settings for us as athletic trainers. And so we're just continuing to get more information. And also we see a lot more students who are interested in working in those, and they're not as interested in the traditional settings and looking more so at those emerging and being able to provide the students with that information as we are continuing to grow in those fields.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. One thing that I've learned about athletic training is that I didn't even know about the growing fields. Amazon has tons of athletic trainers. Companies like that have, you know, have them on staff to help with their employees. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing, that it's not just athletic training being with a sports team or baseball or football or hockey or whatever it is, but just being out with different populations. What is something that you wish you would have known in high school or early on in college that might help you with your profession now?
I was really introverted in high school and college. Like, it was really hard for me to talk to people. And I think that for me, I know, and I try to tell this to students that I see sort of similar, like they're very introverted and they don't want to talk to people, how important it is to talk to people and network. And our profession is so small, and even outside, like the world seems huge, right? But we always say it's like a small world, and the profession is very small. People know people, and it's really hard to step outside your comfort zone and just introduce yourself to a random person. But you just never know who later on those people will know, or who you'll need to call back and like, do you remember when we met at this conference, or we had this conversation about this topic? And I know when I was younger, that was just so hard for me as an introvert, and it's been really hard for me to push outside that box, but it's so beneficial.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting, especially being a teacher and an athletic trainer. You have to be one-on-one conversations with whoever that person is that you're helping and treating. So this is kind of a four-part question that bounces off of that. We're going to look at advice for four different types of age groups. So people that are interested in becoming in athletic training. So if I have a junior or a senior in high school right now that's in taking one of my classes, or that's taken interested in science classes and athletic training, what advice would you have for them to things that they should be looking at or doing currently as a high school student?
I think specifically for athletic training, kind of going back to those other settings, I think that sometimes students don't know all the opportunities within the profession. And this is across probably all health professions. We get a very narrow mindset of what that profession is. And then when you start learning more about it, you say like, oh, I didn't know that they also did this, or they also had these opportunities. And I know athletic training is very much like that too. And so I think sometimes students can be a little bit put off of like, well, I've heard this about athletic training, so I don't want to do that. And instead just trying to get different perspectives and trying to understand more about it. I know this is particular for like females over there, like, well, I don't want to work sports, or I don't want to work professional because it's hard to have a family, or it's hard to have a life, right? And so then they don't want to do athletic training, but there's so many other job settings where that's absolutely okay, and like you would have no problems doing that. So just trying to explore a little bit more. Don't just get one perspective, but get multiple perspectives and really try to explore it thoroughly before you just say no.
Right. Absolutely. So then moving a little bit forward, someone that's graduated high school, that's in their undergraduate, maybe a sophomore or a junior, before they really kind of understand what they really want to do, or have known that they want to be an athletic trainer, what are some things that they should, a college-aged person that wants to get their master's, what are some things that they should be kind of working on or thinking about?
Take all the opportunities that you can. Like, you should explore or try or just branch out a little bit. I think that like that's the time for you to figure out really what you want to do. And so if you have two thoughts of like, well, I don't know this or that, try both of them, like try to get experience with both of them, try to ask people that work in those settings about both of those things, and just try to figure that out early. And then if you are like, you're like, yes, I want to be an athletic trainer, then just taking those opportunities that will also set you apart. Because once you're, when you're in school and you have a class of 20 people, all of those 20 people kind of look the same on paper, right? You took all the same classes, you had all these similar clinical experiences. And so somehow you have to set yourself apart, whether that's volunteering, getting additional experience someplace, whatever it might be. Just taking those opportunities to maybe get some different experience than the other 20 people in your class.
Yeah, I think that's really good too. Something, you know, doing something to set yourself apart, to make yourself stand out and look different than those. Like you said, everybody looks the same on paper unless there's something that sticks out. So then looking at the person that's getting ready to graduate, you know, let's say they're in their last semester of master's program, they're starting to kind of look for jobs, or somebody that is a recent graduate that is waiting to take their boards. What are some things that or advice that you would have for that demographic?
I always try to tell students to remember that you are also interviewing the employer. And I think that that's really hard as a young professional, because you want a job, right? And you feel like, well, they're interviewing me and I have to answer everything right, and I have to just be perfect and things like that. And I think that they just get intimidated by the fact that, like, you should also ask them questions. Like, you want to make sure that this is an environment that you want to work in too. So what is really important for you? Whatever that happens to be, and ask them questions about that and see if that you can be happy there too. And again, I know that's really, maybe that's come with wisdom and having been through not great experiences, or seeing students go through not great experiences. They were really excited that they got this interview and this job offer and they took it, and then they realized it was really horrible and they couldn't do the things that they wanted to do. And I was like, well, did you ask that in your interview? And they were like, no, I didn't think I could. And I think that you should know that you can ask your potential employer or even the other people working there, like, what is it like to work here, or what is your policy about whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think that is pretty cool, interesting too. You know, thinking that you're not just after a job, you're after somewhere that you want to be and want to go to work and show up for. So I think that's good. Now let's take that person and put them, 3 to 6 months on their job, their first job, they're learning all the new stuff, they're in the rotation of doing the daily grind. What's some advice for that individual?
I try to tell those people that you're not expected to know everything. Like, it's not all of a sudden that there's like this switch and like you passed your certification and you got this job and now you know everything about athletic training. Like, it doesn't work like that at all. And there's still so much growing and so much transitioning that has to happen. You're probably going to make mistakes. I made mistakes as a new athletic trainer, but you have to learn from those and you have to move forward and you have to admit when you don't know something. And so I think just understanding that there's not some magic switch that, and not everybody expects you to know everything. I think we all realize that you are a new athletic trainer and you are young in this profession or whatever you're working on. And then it's okay to ask questions or have to look something up or ask for help.
Yeah. Just being able to have the support around you and knowing that other people went through that same process as you did, and using them to help you. I think that's a really good question there. So as a person that likes to read a lot, what would be a book, maybe a lighter reading material for a high school, early college age kid to kind of, you know, I'm interested in athletic training. What's something I can read to further my knowledge?
Yeah, you know, so I looked at my bookshelf earlier in my office, it's right here, and I found this book that I read as an undergrad too, and it's called Rules of the Red Rubber Ball, and it's really small, okay. And it's very short, and it's by an athletic trainer, and it talks about like his life growing up a little bit and his love for sports and then some challenges that he had, but he really puts it into very nice, like simple rules and like advice. And again, it's really small and light reading, so I feel like that would be a really good, like, if you're interested, you should definitely read that book.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm gonna have to look into that. And then, so another question that was developed by our high school athletic trainer, she kind of helped me think of this one. If her, the question is, if you dislike this, then being an athletic trainer is not for you. So her answer was feet. So I mean, Lynn, not going to let you take that one.
I don't like feet either, but maybe that's why I'm in education.
Yeah. So if you dislike blank, then being an athletic trainer is not the right career path for you.
I think if you don't like speaking up, then, and I say speaking up as in sometimes when you're working with a patient and in our situations, we have to stand up for them. Like as their healthcare provider, we have to be willing to do what's right for them. And sometimes that means speaking up against a coach or a guardian or whoever it might be who just doesn't isn't necessarily making the right choices for that person, or maybe that patient doesn't really want that. And so, I think you have to be willing to communicate with people and figure out how to communicate with people and be willing to do that and to learn that always it should be what is the best for the patient, and that's our job and that's our role. And so we have to be willing to fight for them sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that also kind of goes with being a played baseball in college, but having the athletic trainer speak up to the athlete also, because a lot of athletes are, you know, driven to go out and play that sport, and I don't have a concussion. What are you talking about? I'm not feeling any of those symptoms. I want to go out and play, or something like that. So being able to speak up to the athlete as well and say, hey, this is what you need to do. You can't do these things, but you can do this. So
yes.
I like that. Now, if you do like this, being an athletic trainer is the right career path for you.
I would say sort of similar to like education and like what I love seeing. I think it's seeing people reach their goals. Like I think that a lot of athletic trainers get into it because they like seeing the person get back. And so what's really unique about athletic trainers is we get to see them, the patient, on the continuum of when they were hurt or whatever's, you know, happens to be wrong, all the way through the entire treatment and management back to either playing or going to work or just even simple things like daily life activities and stuff like that. We get to see that happen. And I think that that's what's so rewarding about our profession and what people really like about it is that you really get to see and help people get back to their life.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, being able to help them get better and proceed to doing the things that they love. And then so kind of with that last question, you know, thank you so much for spending so much time with us today. Do you have a quote or a mantra that you kind of work your professional life off of?
Yes. what I try to tell myself a lot and what I try to tell students a lot are that challenges are opportunities to change. And that just every challenge, no matter how difficult, and even if we don't understand it at the time, usually I look back and I'm like, that's why that happened. And that happened a lot with transferring schools. I didn't understand why it was so difficult at the time, but then I look back and I'm like, it was so beneficial. And students are going to go through conflict at times. And I'm like, this is an opportunity to learn a lesson. And then you're going to look back and be grateful that you had this lesson, and that I'm here to support them during that. So I always try to remember that the challenges, even though they're really difficult at the time to remember this, but they're an opportunity to change.
Yeah, to change and grow and develop as a person.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for spending an hour with us today. We really appreciate it. And hopefully we got some good information for our students that want to become athletic trainers.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me.
If you've made it this far into the episode, I want to thank you again for watching. Please subscribe, share, and comment below with any questions or comments you may have. If you're interested in more information about other professions within healthcare careers, please visit healthsciencecoach.com and talk to your school counselor or academic advisor. As always, stay happy, healthy, and live life with passion.